Hey everybody, I'm Jessica Kate and welcome to Story Nerds. This week, our episode we're bringing you is a replay of the live Facebook Live launch party that we had to celebrate the launch of my new romantic comedy called Love and Other Mistakes. We have our special guests, our New York Times bestselling author Rachel Houck, an award-winning authors Melissa Tagg and Rachel McMillan, and we hope you have as much fun listening as we had doing it. See you later.
Okay, Rachel, hello.
Hello.
We made it. I'm sitting in the dark. I'm waving my arm, but the lights is not coming back on. This sums up how this is going.
So you have a light. You have a light. Important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need the light to flicker. There are motion sensors. What good's a motion sensor when it doesn't? Flicking the light doesn't do anything either. Oh well, we're here. You can finally see me.
You look bad. I love you. Love you.
Oh, I love how bright it is, mostly. Yeah, bright colours.
I do too. I love it.
Someone asked me if I wore this to match the book, and I did, but I also wore it because red's my favourite colour to wear, and that's why the book actually dressed to match me. When they did the cover,
right.
Amanda Bostick, the publisher at Thomas Nelson, messaged me and said, hey, I knew red was your favourite colour, so what do you think about this draft for the book's cover? And I was like, yes.
That's pretty great because I'm pretty sure she doesn't know my favorite color. So that's really awesome.
I'm pretty sure any time she's seen me in person, I've been dressed in red from head to toe.
I was going to say, you wear a lot of red.
Yep, especially at book conferences. So, welcome.
Welcome.
Is also a Story Nerds event. We should say that too.
It's a what?
It's a Story Nerds event as well. We're going to release the recording for the new Story Nerds episode. So all the listeners will be able to catch up with that.
So that means if you've missed this and you're seeing it as it flows through your Facebook feed, you'll be able to catch it again. So don't worry. You don't have to have FOMO, fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. You'll have a chance to catch up with this interview. Very good. Do you want to start over? Because even though you've already started chatting on Facebook because we did have technical difficulties, Hannah, thank you, saved the day. Do you want to start over and talk about the book a little bit and your inspiration? Let's do that. So when I met let me say this. When I met this book, it was called Hating Jeremy Walters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at some initial chapters for Jess and helping her out, and then she graciously and wonderfully and well-deserved sold it to Thomas Nelson Publishing here in the United States, a division of HarperCollins, and it turned into Love and Other Mistakes, which I think is fabulous. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about how you went from one title to the other, and then we'll talk about your inspiration for the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, the very first title was not Hating Jeremy Walters, although that was the longest running one initially. It had a very vague title. It might have been called All of Me or something vague and romancy, which I think I literally just sat there and thought, I can't think of a title, bleh, called it that. Then after the first draft, I thought of Hating Jeremy Walters. It was the only title I could think of that I liked, so it turned into that. But I like the love-hate vibe. Anybody who's listened to Story Nerds or hung around with me for more than 3 seconds knows that one of my favourite brands of rom-com is the love-hate kind of story, 2 weeks' notice, the proposal, all those great, mostly Sandra Bullock rom-coms.
Yes.
So, Hating Jeremy Walters, it was, because Natalie and Jeremy are ex-fiancés. So, yes, she does hate him, at least at the beginning. And, that really kept on that way until we sold the book and then had a awesome brainstorm with the Thomas Nelson crew, who are so fun to brainstorm titles with. and we landed on Love and Other Mistakes. And that was one that I had included. We had made up a whole list of alternate titles and different things. The only concern was Hating Jeremy Watts kind of sounded a little bit like a young adult novel, which it kind of does. And we're like, oh, this is actually an adult novel. So we want people to like know what it is. And the only way I thought of the title is I make word clouds because I can't really sit there and just like spit out book titles. Some people can do that, but I can't. So I have to make word clouds and like think about it for forever. And I thought of the movie Love and Other Drugs, and I was like, oh, what if we just change the word drugs to mistakes? That really kind of fits what happens because they're ex-fiancés and they're both trying to figure out what they're doing with their lives and everything like that. So yeah. That was how that all came about. And then we had an in-person brainstorming session for book two, A Girl's Guide to the Outback. I got to actually sit in the Thomas Nelson office around the table with these guys, and we threw out ideas up onto the whiteboard. And, yeah, landed on A Girl's Guide to the Outback, which is a title. I mean, I love and Other Mistakes, but A Girl's Guide to the Outback, I'm like, that's just the coolest title ever. I love it so
much.
That
is so awesome. I love that title. Way to go. So tell us we're going to rehash just for some of you guys who are joining us. We started this over on Facebook until we could get it recorded. So tell us about the inspiration of the story. What was your idea about why ex-fiancés? What, you know, usually something happens, we're watching a movie or we're hearing a conversation and we go, oh, and we're off in story land and they're talking about something. So what was your inspiration for this book?
My very first like little baby germ of an idea for this was about two people who were essentially raising a kid together, like kind of doing the teamwork part of parenting, but they were not together. The kid was not both of theirs or anything like that. And that's how I kind of came around to this. Natalie was nannying Jem's infant son, but I also, you know, the love hate thing was in there right from the start, so instantly I was like, oh, but they used to be together but they're not anymore, and so this is now super awkward. He's not her son. She didn't want to be back in their lives, but now she is, and they're being forced to deal with all the stuff that they haven't dealt with in the last 7 years. So that was kind of the initial little piece of it. And I wrote this book, the first and second and probably third drafts of this book, when I didn't know anything about what I was doing. So I mostly sat in my office chair and thought, what should happen next? So I think being about a 22 to 26-year-old at the time of writing, it kind of just ended up reflecting what I was doing at the time, which was sitting there thinking, what am I doing with my life? My job, especially when I first started writing, I had an absolute dead-end job that was only part-time and had been there for quite a while. And Natalie was struggling with being stuck in a dead-end job. Her for much more noble reasons. She dropped out of college to care for her sick father. I just decided I was sick of journalism and went into something else. But I'm talking to another former journalist here. So just sitting there wondering that. And so Natalie is kind of struggling with this feeling. And she has a father who was an evangelist, and she had always planned to follow in his footsteps. And she's really struggling with, I'm not meeting my own expectations for my life, let alone, it's not that her parents put any pressure on her, but she just sort of had this picture of how her life would go, and it's nothing like it is. She finally gets this chance to join our Aussie preacher, Samuel Payton, a character who I love very much, in his up-and-coming youth ministry, but she needs the job to work around it, so she takes up reluctantly Jeremy's offer to nanny. And so her just kind of dealing with that feeling of she so desperately wants this internship that wanting was kind of how the book's kind of exploring how she deals with that wanting. Is it something that is useful and is going to drive her into a better life, or is it something that's going to hold her back, or is it a mix of both? And when you throw Jeremy into the mix as well, then things just get all kinds of crazy, fun, complicated. That was kind of where that came from. And then Lily as well. I can't talk about the inspiration for the book without talking about Lily's story. So she is Jem's 16-year-old niece, and there's kind of a subplot through the book with her. And I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but I think you can kind of spoiler-free say that For the book, Lily is living with Jem because she's dealing with a situation in her family, and she's dealing with the adults around her have really betrayed her trust, and she's watching people that raised her and taught her right from wrong at the age of 16 suddenly doing things that are against their example that they had showed to her. And so her journey through the book is the fallout from that and dealing with it. And people, I would hate to think that anyone thinks that my parents are anything like Lily's. Nope. That's not that. But it was kind of, you know, when I was younger, some issues happened in a few different Christian communities I was a part of, sort of at that late teens, early 20s stage. And they all kind of occurred at about the same time. And that was a real challenge of faith for me. And that was all around the time that this book was starting off. You know, grappling with, oh, these people, you know, not all of them, there weren't all people super close to me, but they were just kind of like adults who had been around when I was growing up in those formative years. And one by one, they all just kind of did stuff. And I was kind of like, what's going on?
That can happen.
Yeah, and it can happen. And it was really, it was something that I could not push under the carpet. I really, because I was at that age where you're deciding, is this for me? Is this not? And so as I wrote the book, it was kind of me hashing out with God as well. You know, why are all the people around me doing this?
And sure. What do you do when people that you know and look up to, especially in the faith, do dumb stuff or walk into it? So let's talk about that for a second. In writing, a lot of times we work out our own issues or we answer our own questions. Were there any of those moments in the story for you where you personally went, oh, and a little bit, what was your conversation with God as you were writing the book?
I don't think the answer came through writing it, although there were probably like little, oh, moments through it, but it was more, I would kind of have the light bulb off in a different area, and then I would come back and be like, oh, okay, that might now affect how I've written that thing in the book. I think that just kind of leaked into each other. But with that one, I really think there was a day I'd kind of been wrestling with it for a while, and there was a day when I just kind of drove home from work and went, God, I feel like I've been hanging on to you by my fingertips, and I'm sick of it, and I'm saying I'm letting go, and you have to catch me, and that's all there is to it. And from then on, I was fine.
That's so good.
I can feel my mother rolling her eyes right now and saying, why didn't you do that at the start?
Well, you have to get to that place, you know? You have to, we all have our own story arc. I mean, every year of our lives, probably we have a different story arc. That's really good. Yeah, that's totally my MO. My MO is, I got nothing, put me where you want me, and like door after door would open. Sometimes almost right away, sometimes down the line, but I think that's a great place to be. And that's where the characters ultimately arrive as well. It's not my dream, God, but your dreams for me. So what was your, I have two kind of brewing questions, and then we can move on and invite other people to come in and talk if you want to. Let me ask this first. How many rewrites? Tell me about that rewrite process. Because the first novel, for those of you who don't know, sometimes the first novel, you know, it's the rough one that it's good enough to buy, but not quite good enough to publish. My first novel with Nelson, and I had Amy McConnell Abson was my editor. I think I had like a 31-page letter, but he actually went line by line through the book. So it was her notes plus just basically the whole book outlined or commented on or whatever. Yeah. So tell me, how was that? What was that process like?
So it started long before Thomas Nelson were even a part of the story, really. I wrote a first draft in 2014, I think, and then took a bit of a break. I'd gone back to full-time work and was finding it hard to write and work at the same time. And so I took a 6-month break, and I'd just written sort of the first 16,000 words of the second draft, but I submitted them to your and Susie's old Fraser competition.
That's right.
6 months into this break, I was walking into Coles, the supermarket here in Australia. I think it's different in America, but walking to Coles, and I get this letter from Susie saying, "Hey, you're a finalist in the Fraser competition." I nearly dropped the phone.
Woo, that was awesome.
That was the start of the second draft, and so that was in the May of 2015, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna go to the conference where you guys announced the winner, which wasn't me, and I'm gonna, pitch to agents. Well, I might never final in a competition again. Let's give it a crack. But I knew I had to finish the book, so I had like 10 weeks, and I'd never written so fast in my life. I chained myself to my laptop and churned out a second draft, and this thing was so. Such a compressed time frame that I wrote the original version of this book was in first person, and I wrote the first third of that draft in first person, and then I sent the first 70 pages to a freelance editor and said, just give me advice, tell me how to course correct now while I haven't written the next two thirds yet, because I'm writing while you're looking at it. And she said, swap to third, and I did, and it worked. It worked for me. Not everyone would do that, but yes, some people should stick to their guns. But in that one, I think I made the right choice in swapping.
I
And
agree.
so, and I finished in third, and yeah, super compressed time frame, polished it up a little bit, just changed, you just take the first three chapters to the conference, so I just changed the pronouns in the first three chapters, and then talked about the book like it was finished, and it was all good.
That, yeah, that's what you gotta do. That's what you gotta do.
Yeah, and that first draft had been so bad that when I wrote this second draft, I didn't even look at the first one. I just knew the characters and roughly knew some major plot points, and it was I just like burned that one and motored through. And my workmates, who are currently sitting in the other room here, they asked me every morning when I walked into work, how many words did you do last night? Because I knew that they knew that I had to keep on board,
Very
especially when
good. They were
I'm
keeping you on task.
He was a legend. So yeah, so that was just the first rewrite. Then I did a freelance edit on it. It was a 40-page editorial letter. Took me 6 months to, yeah, 40. I've heard people talk about horror letters, and they said they were 20 pages. I was like, oh, mine was 40. So
Wow.
yeah, did another huge rewrite. And then did some big tweaks, probably two or three more times. And then we sold it to Thomas Nelson, and then I did their edits, which you do a big content edit, and it was a pretty heavy one. After we did it, Jocelyn said to me, I didn't say this at the start, but I didn't know how you were going to do this because it was so much to change in such a short time. But we did, we survived it. And I love the story so much better. Everybody asked me, oh, did you argue with your editor? Like, this is your story, you should keep it. I'm like, no. Jocelyn saw into my soul and saw what I meant to write but didn't, and then said, no, here's I think what you were going for. How about we think about it this way? And it was like magical genius, and I love the story so much better than when I proofread it and that. So yeah, when I counted, it was probably about six edits all up.
Yeah, I think that's about right. When all said and done, I think almost even now I'll still have that many. So that's fantastic. So it's painful, but it's so worth it. And I want to say to you, as I was reading it, I even said to our mutual agent, Chip McGregor, I said, I'm just really super impressed with the writing and the story. So it your hard work really, really showed. So congratulations
Thank
to
you.
you. And I think you've set yourself up for people to go, oh, I want to read her again. You've got a little bit more going on than, oh, that was cute. And I think you did well. I don't know if it was yours or Jocelyn's idea to add Lily's point of view and layer that in. So it really became a contemporary novel with of course heavy on the romance. So I just felt like we could see and feel your hard work. So good job. Job.
Oh, thank
So
you.
tell us your favorite scene.
Oh, easy. My favorite scene has always been, and I don't know if this makes me a bit of a weirdo, the scene where there's now how can I say this without spoiling things? There is a scene where Lily finds out another aspect to the betrayal that she's dealing with that she it's in about the middle of the story. That she hadn't known about before, and she loses it. And she trashes this person's office and just goes bananas, writes what she thinks about them in lipstick on the walls, leaves a very cutting little note on the desk, just really goes to town. And I just found it really satisfying.
When you can just like go off like you could never do in person, and you're just like,
Yeah.
I would never do this, but I'm gonna make my character do it.
Yep. Just she absolutely goes off her rocker, and
Great scene,
yeah,
great
that
scene.
was was fun for me. I was saying to Rachel McMillan after she read the book and we were talking about Lily's storyline, I said, I don't know if it's a good thing. Maybe I'm a little too close to the angry 16-year-old in my head. And it's not like I have any great life trauma to tap into for that, but I don't know. I seem to easily be able to do it. So anyway, I'm glad
Yeah.
it turned into a fun scene.
Good
So
part
yeah,
is
that was super.
good. So, do you want to invite on your next guest?
Yeah, let's bring in Melissa. Now I'm just going to tap out a message here to Hannah. And oh, look, she just appeared. Hello,
Do I
Melissa.
go? Do I go? I'll go. Talk to
Hey,
Melissa.
lady. Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How about you? How's your release day going?
It's going good. It's a bit dark here. The lights have gone out again, but we can't turn them back on. But yeah, that's cool. It's good that I wore red. You can spot me still.
Yes. You are visible.
So we were going to chat about a little bit about, first of all, you're one of the as all our guests are today on the chat, you're one of the people who endorsed the book. So thank you.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Oh, I'm so glad. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that? Everybody's been listening to me blab about the book and what I think for a while. Do you want to chat to us a bit about a fellow rom-com person? What you reckon?
Yes, I actually had the fun experience of getting to read a little bit of this, probably way before all those edits you were mentioning years ago. So at ACFW, we did a paper critique, and I remember going into my meeting with you thinking, well, she's going to wonder why she paid for this critique because I'm just going to sit here and tell her how amazing this writing is. So I was actually really excited then when a few years go by and I get to read your book for an endorsement because I honestly wanted to know what happened to these characters. And I remembered the opening scene of Natalie being at her job because the book opens with Natalie at her job and she has to leave and she runs into Jem. And I won't give any more details about how they meet up, but I remembered that. And so I was really, really excited to go back and read their story. And what I loved about this book was, for one thing, your writing voice, super witty. Even if your plot had been boring and your characters unlovable, which they weren't, that your plot was great and your characters were lovable. I would have read it just for the witty and writing. But then, yeah, I just love what you did with characters. Rachel said something a couple minutes ago about how there's more to your book than a cute rom-com, because there's a lot of rom-coms that you can read and they're really fun, but you put them down and you don't think of them again. Your book had threads of forgiveness and Natalie, kind of her search for the point of her life. I don't know. It stuck with me, and I'm actually quite a bit older than the characters in your book. So the fact that it stuck with me, I thought that is a really cool thing about it. So
Cool.
I don't know.
Thank
Did I
you.
answer
I vividly,
the
yeah, it does. I was gonna say,
question?
I vividly remember our first meeting. I can tell you, I think word for word, what you said, because it was one of the first times anyone had been like, "Oh yeah, no, this is good." And so I was like, "Oh my goodness, this is life-changing." So thank you. It was definitely worth that meeting.
Oh,
It was
good.
amazing. It was great. So. Now, did you have any questions I thought I'd ask from there's a little bit of Aussie stuff in this book, not quite as much as A Girl's Guide to the Outback will have, but I thought I'd check and see if there was any Aussie questions or anything that popped up to it.
I gotta think about that. I don't know. It was several months since I read it. I don't know if I did have any Aussie questions on this one.
You
I
probably
did. I
don't.
think I want. I think I wondered if Wildfire Ministries was based on something in Australia. So I know I wondered
Ooh,
about
that's
that.
a good
Or if was
question.
it Sam the leader? I wondered, is he based on a real person, or are these all figments of your imagination? I could think of organizations in the United States that maybe they would parallel with a little bit, but
That's a good one. So Wildfire itself and Sam itself, their initial genesis of them was fairly fictional, but The part of Wildfire when Natalie is organizing, there's a part in the book, and this doesn't really spoil anything, where Natalie's organizing an outreach festival for Wildfire, like a youth outreach, and they have motocross people, and they have a testimonial, and they have different zones, and there's gaming zones and food zones and different things. That is an actual event that in my first years at Toowoomba, I was part of a group. We were called Project X, and we would go out to rural towns a few hours away from where we live in Toowoomba, and run these youth outreach events and then connect the people back into the local churches to, so they sort of followed up with everyone in an ongoing basis. But we would kind of organize this big kickoff event, and, you know, everyone out there's isolated and drowned and stuff, so it was just kind of a fun family thing for people to come to. And so that festival was, yeah, just directly ripped off from what we used to do back at Project X. So that was cool. The name Wildfire was actually a new one. I just thought it sounded cool. In some of my drafts, it was called Asylum, which was the name that my parents named their youth group, because they had a little slogan called Safe Place, Crazy Love for both the meanings of Asylum, which always cracked me up and I thought was funny, but it was so hard to explain in the book what it meant. Yeah, everyone was always like, Asylum? What? So we're like, let's change it to something easy to comprehend. Wildfire sounds cool. But yeah, so I always have a little fondness for it because it reminds me of my parents' youth group.
Great. That's fun.
Yeah. Now I'm just checking my little sheet here because I felt like I had a question for you about romantic comedy stuff, and now I can't see where I wrote it, but...
Yeah, I remember in something you said, let's nerd out about romantic comedies. And I was like, okay, I can do that. My only question was, are we going to nerd out about romantic comedy books or movies?
Oh my God. Let's go books, because I have one that I've just started.
Okay.
We all know one rom-com book is not enough. So once you've finished Love and Other Mistakes, everybody, if you're having withdrawals, then read Melissa's book, Then and Now and Always. But then go read, this is a general market book, not a Christian fiction one, but I've just started a book called Waiting for Tom Hanks, which I posted and said, is this Bethany Turner's spiritual twin? Because she's so obsessed with Tom Hanks. And yeah, it's a rom-com about a rom-com obsessed girl who hopes that they will happen in real life, but her life's turned out, you know, not like it yet, and then winds up working on a movie set with a good-looking actor and meet cute. Her friend keeps trying to get her into meet cute situations, and she's like, "No, that's not going to happen." And then she turns around and spills coffee into the good-looking actor who's working on set, and like all the rom-com things start happening. And the whole way through, she's like, "This is ridiculous. This shouldn't be happening." And yet they are. So anyone who likes Bethany Turner, you know, wooing Katie McCaffrey and stuff, that's another fun one. It's my little nerd out for the day.
One that comes to mind for me, and this is one that I read years ago, and I mean, I read it like probably every couple of years, but it's My Life as a Doormat by Renee Gutteridge. If you've read that, it is.
I haven't read that one.
Okay. And it is inspirational fiction, and it's probably one of the first books that I read and thought to myself, and this was long before I was writing, but I thought to myself, wait a second, a book can be Christian fiction and still be funny. Like, I just hadn't read any, and it's laugh out loud funny. The writing is very charming. I think you would especially like it because it's somewhat similar, but it's about a playwright who it's just so funny. It's just something happens with her fiance, and he, to try to make peace with her, like, makes her go to this anger management support group. And there she meets a radio talk show host who has also been, like, I think he's been, like, court ordered to go there. So they're in this anger management group together, and it's hilarious. Awesome. Dude. It's fantastic. I hugely recommend it.
That sounds great. For me, that moment was, they happened close to each other. The moment I realized that books could be funny at all was I was sitting at my old job. I used to work at a school boarding house. And so that involved a lot of just sitting at the office, making sure all the children were alive. And and my workmate had left a Sophie Kinsella book, one of the Shopaholic books. And it was like one of the ones near the end of the series. And I just picked it up and flicked through it and went, oh, this is funny. And it's in a book. It's like a movie, but it's a book.
Right.
And I've been a book fan my whole life, but they'd never made me laugh before. And so then I just, like, I actually got in trouble for reading too long on my shift that night and putting the kids to bed late.
That's awesome. That's when you know you're a good bookworm.
That's it. And then I discovered Jenny B. Jones just after that. And I think in our
Yeah.
first meeting, you mentioned Jenny, and you were like, oh, you mentioned Jenny, and then you were like, and I like her stuff too. And I was like, oh, I just heard Jenny B. Jones's name in the same sentence as mine.
Actually,
It's just a little bit weird.
fun thing about that, my first, back when I was doing the same process that you did of writing a book and submitting it and going to paid critiques at ACFW, my very first paid critique was with Jenny Jones. And it was kind of a situation where I sat down
Yes,
across from her and was like,
said that.
I don't know if I'm going to hear anything that you say because I'm so in awe that I'm sitting down with you right now. Yeah, your writing really reminds me a lot of hers, so super
That
funny.
is like, that just like makes all my days.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
Do
kind of
you
glad your
think
next one comes out. Speaking of rom-com nerd out, when is the last one of what's it called? Phonetically in Trouble, her Enchanted Events series. I'm like eagerly anticipating book three, and I
I
know
know
she has
she's
important life
Yes.
happening, but I
I
really want that book.
know. I can't wait for the next one. And her covers are fantastic, so
And
yeah.
the movie they're making in Ireland of There You'll Find Me. Oh, I am insta stalking that like crazy.
Yes, I love that book. Hey, I noticed in the chat somebody asked me to say the name of the book again, and then I think she means maybe the Renee Gutteridge one, but it's My Life as a Doormat. So
There you
saying
go,
it again.
Maddie. Look at that. I'm gonna go have to add it to my list after this. Out of control TBR. Big problems. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Melissa. I think
You're
we're going to
welcome.
welcome Rachel McMillan on now, but thank
All
you. This
right.
was so much
Thank
fun and so
you.
cool to have one of the very first people to encourage me with writing. I'm like
Yeah.
so tickled pink that you were endorsing the book and here to chat and stuff. It's
Well, I'm
awesome.
so happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you
Yeah.
so much. See you later.
All right, bye.
Hey, Rachel.
Can you see
Hello.
me? Am I
I can
unmuted?
see and I can hear you.
Oh, that's
Yes.
awesome. I've been stalking. I've been behind the scenes. I really want Melissa Tagg's Basket with the Pillows. And I
House is
really
always so
want
beautifully designed.
Rachel Hawkes like bookshelves. Hi.
How are you? How's
Good.
Canada?
Oh, it's great.
Corona's hot.
Yeah, it's great, but actually last week I was in Nashville and I got to hang out with your
Yes.
editor, Jocelyn,
I
which
was
was fun.
stalking that like crazy too.
Oh, I had never been before and it was so neat to see where all the books happen. So that was super fun. So hey,
It is
let's do
super fun.
it. Okay, so it's 8:50 p.m. in Toronto. What time is it in Australia?
In Australia, it is 10:50 on a Wednesday morning.
Okay, so you're in the future.
I am in the future. Back to the future situation happening here.
I am very excited. I don't know what more I can say about the. I mean, you've had some pretty thorough coverage. One of the things I liked about the book was that you gave us not only the, angsty teen scenario, but also a toddler. So you get both child experiences. The rom-com tropes usually pick one or the other. You decided
That's
just to be,
true.
you decided to like elevate it and just have all the chaos at once. And one of the things I also love about this book, and let's shout out to Melissa Ferguson because she has a fun
Yes.
rom-com releasing this November called The Dating
The
Charade
dating
and
charade.
or charade, if you want to sound highfalutin. And both of you have this amazing, I mean, they're both by Thomas Nelson. You both have the same editor. You both have adorable cover art. But one thing, even though your stories are so different, one thing I notice is that you both have this amazing ability to set up that awkward scene where the reader's going like, oh no, please don't walk in now, or please don't. Just those missed moments that I love so much when you're watching a romantic comedy, even if you've seen it 84 times, you're like, ah, characters, smarten up. And I think that you guys both have these wonderful kind of
hit and miss moments. Melissa Tagg does these really well too. Like a scene with a bath towel, like the two characters shouldn't be there and you're biting your nails for them. So I wanted to ask you, how do you set up that kind of tension in your books? How do you
Ooh.
plot out those fun scenes?
That's such a cool question because it makes it sound like I knew what I was doing. Especially the early draft of this book kind of represented. Someone asked me when I was doing all the blogs for like the promotion for this book, what did you learn during the writing of Love and Other Mistakes? And I was like, everything, because this book represents a good like 80% probably of my writing journey. I started at zero with it and I got to published 6 years later. So, first draft, I sat there and the only thing that got me through the middle of the book was asking myself the question, what is the worst possible thing that could happen at this moment? And that is how, now I won't spoil for people, but I'll just say a person shows up about halfway through the book who really is the worst person, especially for Jem, to possibly show up
Oh,
at
yes.
that moment.
Yes.
And I had not planned that appearance at all. I sat there and I thought, what would be worst? Oh, I know what would be really, really bad. I'll bring this person in. And then I'll make Jem's dad show up like just after that, because Jem and his dad have, probably world's most dysfunctional father-son relationship. And he's a police captain, so he's like a pretty intimidating dude at the best of times. And yeah, I think that dinner party scene was also a pretty fun one, where things are, yeah, going wrong for everyone. I knew kind of, I was writing it, I was kind of biting my nails for poor old Jem with
And it could
people on every
easily,
side of the table glaring at him.
but these scenes could be, because I don't think anyone will be shocked because it's all I talk about. My favorite genre of romantic comedy is Hallmark Christmas movies. And whenever I read a good rom-com, I'm seeing the action in my head because it could be so well adapted. So I think we need to ask you, dream casting, who would
Dream casting.
star? If you could pick
Oh.
anybody
Now
to star.
this was another question that came up and I found it so hard to answer. Now, if I did say for Natalie, I was like maybe like a Jennifer Lawrence but on a really bad hair day kind of thing,
Oh,
because my
yeah.
characters, especially in this book, I really purposely made them not especially, not ugly, but they're not especially good looking.
They're
Natalie
just
often
humans,
talks
yeah.
about tiny boobs.
Yeah.
And Jem, he's all freckly. And in the very early, well, in a lot of the drafts, I picture him with red hair. In the final version, it ended up being brown with like auburn highlights because we had a red cover and we couldn't put a red-headed character on a red cover.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
And I love the cover so much. I was like, okay, I choose the cover and I
Over
obviously
my
make it
character's hair.
pretty.
Sorry, Eddie Redmayne, you didn't get this job.
Yes. But I'm so glad you said Eddie Redmayne, because not him, but like a taller, slightly more broader Eddie Redmayne kind of thing. Similar facial features, freckly, redhead kind of
Yeah.
guy. I think I said when they asked me that, I said like Ryan Reynolds, but with red hair. But then I was like, I can't picture Ryan Reynolds with red hair. He has the wrong skin tone for that. But I don't know. I think what he puts across is that kind of friendly, sort of charming, like the Ryan Reynolds out of what's the movie where he has the daughter? Definitely Maybe. And you're
Definitely
trying to
maybe.
work out who
Yeah.
the mother is. Yeah,
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds vibe out of Definitely Maybe. But redheaded Eddie
Yeah.
Redmayne
A
taller.
good Canadian, because we always joke that we're the colonials. Colonials infiltrating poor Thomas Nelson, who's had all these American writers, and then
That's
Australia, Canada. I wanted to talk to you about, because we've mentioned like Bethany Turner, who I adore, Melissa Tagg, Jenny B. Jones. There is a renaissance right now in romantic
Yes.
fiction in the CBA. Like
So
Carla
funny.
Loriano just won the Rita Saturday night, in New York.
Woo!
Good for her. So I'm seeing all this, because for a while there was a bit of a drought, and now it's coming back. And how cool is it
I'm
to be
so
one of
excited.
the authors who's starting this new wave of voices?
There was a definite moment, Melissa Ferguson and I, like we were saying earlier, how similar our books are. We met each other at the last conference last year and have named each other Pub Twins because we are publishing twins, same genre, same editor and everything. And early on, about a year ago, Melissa messaged me and said, do you realize how many years it's been since Thomas Nelson acquired a rom-com author? And so we sat in their author list. They have a list on the website, and we trawled through everybody, and we went, oh, look at that. The trend went away for a little while. Like, existing people stayed, but the acquisitions went away from rom-com for a chunk of years, and then they came back, and we were just like, can you believe that we're the people that they picked to be a part of the new wave? And we're like, I can't believe it. Can you believe it? Nope. And I don't think it really has sunk in kind of until now, and I'm like able to hold it in my hands. And even now, I've been holding this thing in my hands for about 2 weeks, and it's only now that people are sending me photos of it on bookshelves that it's kind of sinking in. I'm like, oh, I'm a real author. I kind of expected to be in this waiting pattern for an eternity. It's been 6 years. I got used to it, but it finally happened. So yeah, it's really kind of blowing my mind a little bit. And I was chatting with a friend this week who is writing, shout out to Hayley Elliott, editors, get onto it. She is writing adventure Christian rom-com. And I was like, it's like an action kind of vibe. And I read her first couple of chapters the other night and I went, oh, if I knew anything about action, then I would do that too. But I don't know anything about any action scenarios and can't write about it with any authority, so I don't do it. But if I knew anything about the Amazon jungle, which is where her first book is happening.
Oh, that's so fun.
I know, it would be so fun. And I was like, dude, this is a good time for you, because I rattled off Bethany, Melissa, me, like all the different people who are kind of starting to get rom-com stuff, and Netflix. Thank you, Netflix, for getting quality rom-coms back on our TV screens. So excited about that. Like the whole entertainment industry is swinging back in our favor.
Sally Thorne, right? I mean, come on, Hating Game.
We have
that.
Talk about how much we love Sally Thorne books.
I mean, there should be a caveat for people who are watching that Sally Thorne, the Hating Game is wonderful, but it depends on, everyone has different content levels that they're comfortable with, and there is some language and some sexual content. But I look at that as one of the books that just, now it started the cover design trends that we're seeing. Mm-hmm.
When we made the cover, I sent a picture of the Hating Game and said, "Bring me this."
Yeah, and I think that it really re-jump-started, because I don't want to take away from the authors who, like Tamara Leigh and so many Christian authors that were doing it for years and years and years. But it's almost like a new wave that's repopularizing it. It's so fun. And now, when does book two come out?
Oh, I'm so excited about this, because I'm proofreading book two right now. Like, I'm up to chapter 12. I had to stop doing it to do a bit of launch stuff, and then I'll go back to it afterwards. Book two comes out on the 28th of January, 2020. So it's only 6 months away. And
that's the easiest to remember, too. 2020, January.
Yep. January 2020. Have fun. 2 days after Australia Day, if you're an Aussie. And it's going to be super awesome. There are two characters in Love and Other Mistakes who will be with us for A Girl's Guide to the Outback. And Jem's dad makes a cameo appearance, actually. So see if you can pick who the two characters are. It's not a super hard challenge to figure out.
I think I figured it out, but I won't ruin it for the readers. However, I enjoyed that even though you had an American set book, you know, as writers, we want to make sure that we're getting a bit of the flavor of where we come from, and you do that so well in Love and Other Mistakes. And I can't wait till Girl's Guide to the Outback. I love the cover, the yellow, it just pops. It's going to pop out on the shelf. Do you need to move on to the, I'm just looking over at the screen here. Sorry, everybody.
I was just looking at the chat. Angela's going to shoot us some questions from all the folks. I've been trying to keep an eye on here. I have limited internet, so I've been flicking my phone on and off to save data so that my chat here with Rachel keeps working. But I've been watching people's comments out of the corner of my eye, and Angela is going to send us through some questions that people have been asking, and Rachel and I can chat about them. So we're just waiting for Angela to shoot those through. I will mention a comment that I did spot from my mother when we were just talking about redheaded men who could play him. She suggested Ed Sheeran. On your mum.
He's cute. And he, I haven't seen it yet, but he's in that Beatles movie. So he acts. The,
is he?
The Yesterday
He has
movie.
A good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right. Jem has Ed Sheeran's sense of humor and his hair color. I will say that. I love watching Ed in interviews and stuff because his self-deprecating way of laughing at himself is hilarious. So they do actually, yes, share some very big traits. Jem does not have the same musical skill, however.
And I was so glad she didn't have the typical rom-com heroine job, which is like highfalutin advertising in New York City and lots of shoes that she can afford somehow. And
which is
apartment.
Like what Ollie's birth mother is, yeah.
You know, she had a regular job like all of us, trying to make ends meet, worrying about money,
yep.
worrying about her family, that kind of thing.
Yep, and then I have, see, I'm going to have to, in book three, pull my people's good-lookingness, like, down another level, because I very much want people to be, like, the every people. But then I had this thing where some of the people I set up in book one were mostly to kind of, like, cause problems for Natalie and Jem. So I had to make them better-looking than Natalie and Jem in order to flare up some insecurities.
I guess
but
even
then...
pretty people deserve love.
Yeah, I guess so. Then when I used them for A Girl's Guide to the Outback, I was like, damn, I made everybody too good-looking. Now this is about the every girl. So I'm just checking here to see if our comments have come through. I can't see them yet, so I'm going to flick through. I can see the chat here. Caitlin says, how did you choose the setting for Love and Other Mistakes? Great question, Caitlin. I, not being American, found it hard to write about America a little bit. I know some things off TV, but that only goes so far. So I asked my critique partner, Nico Bell, if you like to read the horror thriller suspense genre. She is a writer over in that space. She used to live in Charlottesville, and I just described the kind of town that I needed and asked my critique group at the time, does anybody know of a location that fits this, that you can kind of be my information source about? And she said, hey, I used to live in Charlottesville. How about you set it there? And I went, rightio. So it's in Charlottesville. And I ended up actually visiting Charlottesville in 2015 after I'd written sort of a draft of the book, but I went around and kind of got a few more details. But can I say, Google Street View is awesome because I would like to walk
the
streets.
It is the best.
Also,
the fact that Christian publishing is centered in America and so many of the books are set there and so many TV shows and movies are set there, for another non-American, it because it's such a huge part of international culture, that makes it a little easier. We get to see what they're eating, mm-hmm. what M&M flavors they have.
That's cool. Oh, we have a question. Oh, sorry, Angela. She's been messaging me through my other app, which I have not had up on my phone. Apologies. Katie Donovan asks, do you ever then get stuck wondering how you're going to get the character out of the horrible situation you've gotten them into? Katie, I fear this happening. It hasn't happened yet, but I am worried about, mostly as I'm sitting thinking about like the ideas I have for book three, I've kind of got that situation. I'm like, okay, I've got problems, but I don't know how I'm going to fix them. So yeah, how do you deal with that, Rachel? Please tell me.
I sometimes, it depends on the character, I sometimes let it play out. I allow myself to fall down rabbit holes. And this has the horror story that people heard on Facebook a few weeks ago. I ended up having to delete 35,000 words from my current manuscript that's due September 1st. So that's, for non-writers, that's a huge chunk. It's because I let my characters kind of fall down rabbit holes. And I mean, I think it's also because you get to the point, I hope you're at this place, the characters start acting and talking for themselves once I've spent a lot of time on the manuscript. I've got to make mm-hmm. sure. You have to make sure that you love these people because you're spending a lot of time with them. All the edits, all the rewrites. So I know mm-hmm. them well enough by the time I start typing that I let them have their own agency. But that's a fantastic question. And Katie Donovan, mm-hmm. I hope that Jessica and I do this well for you as a reader because you read a lot. You're so smart.
That's awesome. Perry Ann, I hope I'm saying that right. Yes, Perry Ann, do you have M&Ms in the airbag? We do have M&Ms in the Outback. When I say Outback, depends which definition you use. I have lived in some very rural areas. I think the technical Outback is like the way out stuff, haven't been there. But we just don't have a lot of flavours. You know, you've got like your normal, your peanut, your crispy. You might get the occasional promotional like caramel or those Christmas red and green ones. But
pumpkin spice.
Not the... Yeah, oh, no pumpkin spice Australia. Pumpkin spice isn't a thing in Australia. It doesn't exist. So,
when we were over there, treat you.
We were like tasting pumpkin spice things. Jocelyn actually took me out and fed me like pumpkin spice Dunkin' Donuts, I think. She was like, you have to eat something pumpkin spice. It's an American tradition. And because pumpkin spice M&Ms are mentioned in the first chapter of the book, she was like, we are making this happen. So, yeah. So, pumpkin spice. It's something unusual for us. I'm addicted to America's hot apple cider. That's not a thing here either, and I'm devastated. I want it so much now. Hannah is saying the chocolate caramel koalas. Yes, that's something we do have. Australia has a thing called a caramello koala. It is a Cadbury chocolate, which, do you have Cadbury in North America?
Yeah.
I don't
and
think
it's
so.
A,
oh, you do?
Like, it's so good. But remember Canada. So we get the British Cadbury. Oh, yeah. I believe that Americans... are mad at us because they don't get the real stuff. They get like Americanized Cadbury.
America, go visit Canada, get around these caramello koalas.
The exchange rate is in your favor. Yeah.
And it's full of caramel and it's just delicious. And yeah, I gave them out around the publishing house last time I was there. So just trying to share the joy.
I noticed that a lot of Thomas Nelson authors bribe, like Rachel Linden, whose book Enlightenment of Bees just came out. It has a strong romantic thread, guys, even though it's not romantic comedy.
And a super cute cover.
Yeah, she bakes cookies and like people give chocolate.
Pauline Kael takes cookies, I'm pretty sure I've heard her say. These publishing house people seem to be very well fed.
they're good. and she takes them to bookstores too. I just think it's so neat. I don't bake, so I just sometimes bring maple cookies, boxes of maple cookies when I go to conferences, little Canadian maple leaves.
I could be on board with that. Rachel McDaniel asked who would cast if it became a movie. We talked about this a little bit before. I think Jennifer Lawrence on a really bad hair day and put Eddie Redmayne, stretch him and make him a little bit broader, and then he can be...
a bit of Ed Sheeran.
Hybrid. Yeah, make a DNA hybrid of Eddie Redmayne meets Ed Sheeran, and he's taller. And then that's Jem. Now, have I missed any questions? Maybe one of those rabbit holes or another book entirely. Could be.
Yeah.
Have thought about it before.
Sometimes.
Let's see. What about kangaroos? We don't really have chocolate kangaroos. No, I don't think so. Maybe
you need to kickstart that, make tons of money.
Yeah, Angela says too bad. There is a thing that Cadbury has of like native animals in chocolate. So they have like bilbies and stuff like that. There's probably a kangaroo one of them. But yeah, now I think I'm just going to check my app here. Oh, Jocelyn's watching. She pushed the angry button by accident on the live.
Or maybe
button.
She's just really mad at us.
She was angry that pumpkin spice isn't in Australia. Hey, Jocelyn.
Hi, Jocelyn.
Now let me check if there's any questions right here. Peanut butter M&Ms. I've tasted them. I like the peanut ones a bit better. Hey, David. David's watching on a break from his lecture.
Oh,
I said to him yesterday.
Isn't he wonderful?
I'm fine at the lecture. It's a lecture he's giving, and he was like, Jess, it's a lecture. Not even I have fun.
Oh,
I thought that was funny.
I
you
loved
can admit
the
it,
baggage
David.
Handler so much. Loved it.
Yeah,
just
I just finished reading
book.
The Camera Never Lies for endorsement.
Oh, I can't wait
my
to
first book
one.
I've ever endorsed. It's exciting. You'll hear
and
more
guys,
about that soon.
This is why I love Jessica Kate, because she's always, always, always promoting other writers. I mean, with Story Nerds, she let me be on that podcast last year just to go on about my Viennese romance that was releasing. And Jessica, you really established that sense of community, and I love that, because readers and authors should have this sense of community. And authors, you know how difficult it is. Like, we're at the stage where some people think it's enviable because we have books out, but we also know how difficult it is. And so the fact that you were mentored by Rachel Houck and Susie Mae Warren and Melissa Tagg and that crew at ACFW, where now you're in the position where you're able to help other authors, and you do all the time. And so she's not only a brilliant writer, guys, with the world's best hair and accent and fashion sense, she's also a wonderful human being. There.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so lovely. And on that note, I think we're going to have to end. I could sit here and keep talking about the book forever, but I have the
you
reason
have to
why
go
I'm
to work.
Sitting in this office is because I have a work meeting I have to go to, which I am now 12 minutes late for, and I really better hustle. So thank you so much for coming, Rachel and Melissa, and thank you everybody for watching. I'm going to go through later and respond to the comments and stuff once I'm off the clock at work. I would like to say thank you to my boss for letting me come and do this. If she watches this, I'm not bagging out work. I'm very grateful. They're all super supportive. I have all these books stacked up on my desk, and everybody's been coming over to smell them. That's the first question everyone asks. They grab the book out of my hands and they go,
does it smell?
And they give
like
it a
book?
Big sniff.
Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you. Okie doke. Bye, everybody.
Bye.